please listen.
This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson, and it's time now for today's cover story on smell.
Now, I'm not all about dissing someone else's personnel, but there's no quota on your odor.
That's right, you smell.
The 90s hip-hop group De La Soul used humor and rhyme to talk about a guy who smelled bad. If the members of De La Soul weren't Americans, but European, as their name suggests, they might not care so much. The French, in particular, like things a little pungent. That's a stereotype, but it's also true. Look at Proust. In Remembrance of Things Past, after pages praising the stimulating effects of the Madeleine cookie, he savored the funky air lingering in the small, stale rooms of his aunt's home in the countryside. Proust also wrote this: "When nothing else subsists from the past, after the people are dead, the smell and taste of things remain poised for a long time, like souls." Which reminds me of a big old rough tweed jacket of my late father's that I have in my closet at home. It hasn't been cleaned since he died in 1988, and when I very occasionally put it on, I feel completely in his presence because of the way it smells. My guest today says that starting to pay close attention to smell has changed the way he experiences the world. Chandler Burr is the author of the book The Emperor of Scent. It is the true tale of a 50-year-old French-Italian scientist today named Luca Turin, who is devoted not just to cracking the scientific mystery of how smell works, but to smell itself as a glorious, romantic, artistic sense. Chandler Burr, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you very much.
So, the very fascinating hero of your book, Luca Turin, who is he?
He's a guy who was standing next to me in line waiting for the Eurostar in the Gare du Nord train station in Paris. And we start talking about, you know, what's he going to do and this and that. And I said, well, I'm excited to take the Eurostar because, you know, that scene in the end of Mission Impossible 1 where Tom Cruise flies the helicopter into the thing.
And he into that very tunnel.
Exactly. Into the Eurostar tunnel that we're going to go through. And I say, wow, it was a great scene and it's fun. And he says, yeah, it's great. Of course, it doesn't work according to the laws of physics. I said, what do you mean? And he proceeds to explain exactly why the rotors don't work and this sort of thing. I said, you know a lot about physics. He says, yeah, I'm a physicist. Biophysicist. And I said, really, what do you do? He says, I do smell. We talked the entire time. We didn't sit down. And as the train pulled into Waterloo Station, I said, I want to write about you. That's where the book came from.
And he said, sure, you can trail me and hang out with me for the next year or two? Or?
Yeah, I don't think I know that he didn't quite know what he was getting into, but yes, that's essentially what I did.
You say, among other things about him, that he should win the Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
There has been a Nobel Prize for hearing. There has been a Nobel Prize for vision. These things worked out. I think that those were both in the 1960s. Taste, we pretty much understand. As my taste is this incredibly simple thing. You only taste five things, by the way. Sweet, sour, salt, bitter, and a taste that nobody in America knows about called umami, which I actually just wrote a piece
richness.
About. Richness, deliciousness, exactly, yes. How'd you know that?
I read your book.
Oh, all right. Do you know that 95, 98% of everything you taste, you actually smell? Well, nobody's figured out smell. And there's a theory that's the reigning theory that is based on shape, the shape theory. And basically it says that, you know, you lean over and you smell a rose, you smell asphalt, you smell lemon. You have actual molecules of the rose, the asphalt, the lemon, that go up into your nose and they sit in receptors that are called G-protein receptors. They're very well known. And these things feel the shape of these molecules. And they say, ah, this one's shaped like a football, so it's rose. This one's shaped like a frisbee, so it's lemon. And this is very well known, this very well understood principle, because guess what? The digestive system works this way. You figure out the shape of these things, and the immune system and the neurological system, whereby we figure out the shape of dopamine and serotonin, this sort of thing. Well, the problem is it doesn't work in smell. It doesn't work, and nobody wants to admit it. Luca Turin believes that we smell smells, not from their shape, but from their vibration, how they vibrate in the very molecules. He came up with a theory, and the theory is not the shape theory, it's the vibration theory.
So the establishment theory basically says these cells feel each other, and it's all about shape. It's this sort of sculptural model.
Right.
His theory is about vibrations. It's a sort of musical model, right?
Exactly. It is a musical model. Turin got into this through a very weird way. He's a scientist, but he's a marine biologist. He was obsessed, always has been, maniacal for perfume.
As a child. Even.
As a child, he was a nutcase for smells. He grew up, he got his PhD, started doing his marine biology. And when he wasn't in the lab or on the beach, he would be driving around looking for perfumes. And he started this perfume collection. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. He just knew that he loved perfumes. He was obsessed with them. And he would find these original things that nobody had seen for 40 years that had come from these companies that didn't exist anymore. And he would buy bottles of this stuff. And he talked to his friends about it constantly, and his friends got sick of him. And they said, look, write a perfume guide and be done with the damn thing. And so he sat down and he did. And he would write these things. And can I read you one of them? It was perfume writing that nobody had really seen before. For example, of Rive Gauche, he said, thanks to Rive Gauche, mortals can at last know the scent of the goddess Diana's bath soap. And you're sort of preparing yourself for, you know, her breath or her hair or something like this, bath soap. He said, a true emblem of the 70s, this sumptuous reinterpretation of the innovative metallic note found in Calandre by Paco Rabanne belongs to the uncrowded category of sculpture perfumes. Its silvery form, initially hidden by white powdery notes, soon pierces the clouds and gains height by the hour, a masterpiece. He wrote these things in the most sort of flowery, poetic language, using images, not using the tired categories of this is a woody, this is an oriental, and this kind of thing. Found a publisher for it, amazingly enough, because nobody wanted to publish. He finally found one. And the thing became the best-selling perfume guide in France. Now, something interesting happened. The perfumers read it. These perfumers are geniuses. But they're unknown geniuses. They're secret geniuses. They hide in the background. And he started to know these people like Françoise Caron. And he went to Françoise Caron's office. And this is a woman who created Acqua di Gio and for Armani and several great fragrances. Very, very well known. And she gave him a bottle of something that she was working on. And he said, oh, you know, this is interesting. He's smelling it. And he said, you know what this smells like? This smells like one of those Thai silks that sort of give you two different colors depending on how the light strikes them. And she looks at him. And she pulls out a brief for the perfume from her desk. Now, a brief, I should tell you, is a top secret document that nobody ever sees. They are the vision of the house, okay, of the people at Dior, for example. So she pulls this brief out and she shows it to him. And the brief says, we want a perfume that gives off two completely different characteristics, just as do the Thai silks that differ in color according to the way the light strikes them.
It's See, but that's pretty amazing that his, among, you know, 100 different, you know, metaphorical descriptions for mm-hmm. what this smell was, he came up with literally the one that was buried in the drawer that they'd intended, made this woman think, and certainly makes one think reading your book, that he is a kind of singular wizard of this, not only in having this extraordinary sense of smell, but a great writer in this very specialized way of being able to put smell into words.
Yeah, yeah. And he doesn't do it with these categories. He doesn't do it with adjectives. He does it with nouns and with metaphor.
And to make a long and delightful story short, the scientific establishment in the various realms that he was daring to venture into all just shot him down, crushed him.
Yep, absolutely. They wanted nothing to do with him. And one of the great things that my editor, Scott Moyers, said to me was, he said, remember that you're writing a mystery, a murder mystery basically, and you're sending out a bunch of clues for the reader. And every scientific datum that you give is another clue. And sure enough, what I did was structure the thing so that when you go through it, when you read Luca Turin's story, you get each clue that he carefully lays out to you. And you decide. You decide if he's right or if he's wrong. I think he's right. And that's why I think there's a Nobel Prize coming to him at some point.